We're back with Philip Lopate. He has edited a new book called American Movie Critics, an anthology from the silence until now. It is published by the Library of America. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Just one more thing before we get to some of these calls. You have a number of important female critics here.
Yes.
We were talking about Pauline Kael and more recently Manolo Dargis. Mm-hmm. But they seem to be disproportionately underrepresented. Is that because women just haven't done as much film criticism?
No, there have been women critics all along. And one of the earlier ones was a woman named Cecilia Ager, and she wrote film criticism with an eye on fashion as well. And she was very funny. And she really was kind of like a proto-feminist who would sort of analyze what was going on in the films by looking at the women characters. She did a little riff, for instance, on Margaret Dumont, you know, the very heavy-set woman who was in the Groucho Marx films. Mind if I read it?
Of course.
"There ought to be a statue erected, or a congressional medal awarded, or a national holiday proclaimed to honor that great woman, Margaret Dumont, the dame who takes the raps from the Marx brothers. For she is of the stuff of which our pioneer women were made, combining in a highly indignant person, Duser, Stalwart Oak, and Chief Fall Guy, a lady of epic ability to take it, a lady whose mighty love for Groucho is a saga of devotion, a lady who asks but little and gets it. Disappointment can't down her, nor perfidy shake her face. Always she comes back for more, though slapsticks have crippled her, custard pies spattered her trusting face. Surrounded by brothers who are surely a little odd, she does not think so. To her, her world of Marx Brothers pictures is rational, comprehensible, secure. Calmly she surveys it, with infinite resource she fights to keep on her feet in it. Equally ready for amorous dalliance or hair-pulling, for Groucho's sudden tender moods or base betrayal, all her magnificent qualities are on display in A Day at the Races, where once again her fortitude is nothing human, it's godlike."
Mm. Margaret Dumont is that rod that allows the Marx Brothers to be so wild. If she wasn't there as something steadying, yes, they wouldn't seem as funny, I think.
And Molly Haskell is a very important woman critic who wrote so beautifully about women in her first book, From Reverence to Rape, and since then.
Let's take some calls. James calling from a car somewhere. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you? Is this Mr. Lopate?
Yes. Well, it's Mr. Lopate and Mr. Lopate.
It's like the Smith Brothers. You take your pick.
I wanted to ask you if you've had the experience watching a film and you liked it a lot and you were moved by it but couldn't really explain why. And the film I was actually thinking about, it's happened to me a few times, was a recent French film, How I Killed My Father. And I came out of this film thinking it was profound and moving, and it's a little bit like trying to describe why I love the acting of Marlon Brando,
mm-hmm,
or James Dean, or why a particular piece of music. Do you ever run into that situation where it's...
Well, I have...
This would be very difficult for a reviewer, wouldn't it?
Well, I have to admit that that film critics develop detachments so that even while you're crying in the movie theater, you're grappling around for leads and language is popping into your head, and so the idea that when something is very deep, words fail it. I don't think writers can take that point of view.
Thank you so much for calling us, James. John Simon. Oh, not John Simon, I'm sorry, Tom. Tom from Merrick, New York, who wants to talk about John Simon.
Wow, that would be something if I were John Simon.
Yeah, well,
John is going to be here soon, actually, to talk about some books he's written.
Go on. I wanted to lead into something. Leonard, I enjoyed your opening for Mr. Frank Ford at Stuyvesant High School, and the one film criticism that you did make was pretty bad. Angela's Ashes was a great book, and an okay movie. That sarcasm.
We're having this call is really coming is fading in and out. Can you try to ask a question quickly?
Yes, I just wanted to ask if you the role of the overcritical critics such as John Simon, the one who used.
I put John Simon in the book. Actually, I think John Simon is an excellent writer. But he does
have a reputation for being a bit hard.
He can be very mean. He's famous for sometimes critiquing the way actresses look physically. He loves art, and he wants it to measure up to his very high standards. And I certainly think that that from the sheer point of, from the point of view just of writing alone. He delivers a lot of interesting material.
Thank you for calling us, Tom. Joanna from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about how many women are sitting on the committee to let films into the New York Film Festival.
One. And that's Lisa Schwartzbaum. And usually we've had two sometimes, sometimes one. We may have had three once, but anyway, it's usually between one, two, and three.
And that's just circumstances, or
yeah, sometimes it's available.
There's no quota system.
Sometimes it's who's available. I was on the New York Film Festival before when there were two women, but in any case, we definitely need the woman's point of view.
Okay, Joanna.
Yeah. I just think that it is different. What I think about film sometimes and what I read reviews about.
Well, does it matter? There have been any number of leading female film critics going in New York Times after Bosley Crowther. We had Renata Adler.
Renata Adler.
Had Janet Maslin. We have Manolo Dargis now. Do you think that they review the films all that differently from the men who work for the Times?
No, I don't.
Actually, I think they do. I mean, in today's Times, Manolo Dargis reviewed Basic Instinct 2, and spent a good part of the article talking about the fate of aging women actresses and the way they're treated. And probably A.O. Scott wouldn't have spent quite that much time on that one issue.
Thank you for your call, Joanna. Harvey from Livingston.
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Lopate. I get the feeling that most film critics write their reviews for other film critics, or to prove how erudite they are.
Yeah, there's something to that. I mean, there's a lot of addressing one's peers. Definitely, I think you picked up on something that's very real.
I would. My recommendation is that all film criticism has to have a 50-word or less opening paragraph, which would say this is a well-acted film with a beautiful scenery, but a kind of pedestrian script, and then I could read the other stuff at my leisure if I want to, but now I know exactly what the film is about in terms of how good it is in the view of the reviewer.
So you want a classic news lead, but Philip, aren't there films sometimes that are a bit more complicated than that? It's a little difficult to encapsulate it that way.
I think there are a variety of approaches you can take. Sometimes you can keep it a mystery what your final judgment of the piece is, and sort of work through it through your own ambivalences at times. I don't think it's necessary to put the judgment right off the bat. You can create a kind of suspense if you defer the judgment sometimes.
Well, so that's why some critics object to the whole star system, isn't it?
Yeah, because it seems like a crude way of putting a label on all of your thoughts about something, which can be quite complex. And Manny Farber said he didn't even think that the judgment was that important. He thought what you thought about a film was important.
The issues you were bringing up.
The process of thinking through something and the issues that you bring up, exactly.
TJ from Greenpoint, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well, and what about you?
I'm great. I just wanted to mention that 20 years ago in high school English, I had an English teacher who used the Pauline Kael anthology just to teach us good writing.
Yes, I think that Pauline Kael belongs to the ages as far as good critical prose is concerned. And, you know, she's an American classic, and she should be taught that way.
Yeah, I just remember one criticism she had of Dances with Wolves. She didn't like the way the wolves acted. I just
you know, speaking of Dances of Wolves and gender, There's a piece in my book by Paul Rudnick who takes on a woman's persona, Libby Gelman-Waxner. And she says about Dances with Wolves, "I've often wondered what would happen if instead of having my own room with a canopy bed and a Snoopy phone in Great Neck, I had been kidnapped as a child by Indians and raised as a Sioux. Now, thanks to Kevin Costner's Dances with Wolves, I have my answer. In this three-hour cinematic epic, Mae McDonnell plays a white woman who was brought up in a teepee after a pioneer family was slaughtered and scalped. As a squaw, Mary behaves just the way I would. She wears stunning suede outfits trimmed with shells and Ralph Lauren-style Santa Fe fringe. She does her hair in a flattering shag look instead of too severe tribal braids. And after her first husband dies, she holds out until a white movie star shows up."
Thank you for your call, TJ. Teresa from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show. By the way, you're talking to Philip Lopate, my brother, whose latest book is American Movie Critics, an anthology he edited that covers film criticism from The Silence Until Now, published by the Library of America. Go ahead.
Hi, Philip.
Hi.
You had touched upon, I guess, perhaps the dubious future of film criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I just wanted to, 2 points, just to say that I don't think that it's dying, but in fact that it's just a really important emerging anthropological study. And that people these days read less and less books, but, I mean, obviously, in fact, watch more TV and movies. And I'm actually kind of surprised that TV criticism isn't as big as movie criticism.
That's an interesting point. I think that movie criticism is going to be around for a long time.
I think so, too.
People care about and love movies, and there's going to be a need for articulate response to this passion.
But we are seeing, I think, better TV criticism
yes.
in the New York Times than we did in the past. They have
yes.
a couple of critics who are rather witty
yes.
and who handle some of those awful shows that come along in a very interesting way.
Right. And I've been reading a lot of reviews for Big Love, actually.
The new
show on HBO on polygamy.
Polygamy, yes, right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a really great example of just how, you know, movies and television really is a reflection of our society.
What, are you suggesting that I'm in a polygamous relationship?
No, but you could be.
It's news to me.
Maybe the show will want to make you go into it. No, but just even with the semiotics,
right.
I guess the criticism, it just tells so much. And my second point is, I guess I kind of just wanted to rave over Manuela Dargis.
Yes.
I just find her to be so exciting. And
I feel the same way.
So many of my friends are excited about her, and it's funny because we almost have a personal relationship with her. I think when she first came on as a critic to the New York Times, she was very biting and sarcastic, and she still is.
Mm-hmm.
But in a sense, she was a little bit darker, and then with reviews like In Her Shoes, where she was a bit chipper
yes.
and optimistic, we were wondering, well, how's, you know, maybe something in her personal life has changed.
No, I mean, she maybe it has or maybe it hasn't, but she sent me to In Her Shoes, and I really liked that movie.
Thank you so much for your call. This call reminded me that I wanted to ask you about another. You talked earlier about national character
mm-hmm.
revealed in movies. What about national character revealed through the lens of its country's film criticism?
Mm-hmm.
Because this is all about American film criticism.
Yes.
If you had done a book of French film criticism,
yes.
for example, would it have been all that different? Is there just a different way that people see movies in different countries? Do the British look at the same movies we look at and see different movies again?
Yes. There can't help but be some national character. For instance, in America, there was a somewhat of an anti-intellectual tradition from the first, which is, well, these are just movies, you know. It's just a movie. And so people had to kind of josh and joke and kid a great deal. In France, you know, you had great film critics like André Bazin and the Cahiers du Cinéma School that followed, and Deleuze and people like that. And I think it was more high-powered intellectual study.
Adam from, is it Park Ridge, New Jersey?
Yes, it's Park Ridge.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thanks. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question about whether you think film criticism has changed due to film critics seeing DVDs and watching them alone or not in either in a screening room with other people or with an audience. I'm a reviewer myself.
Mm-hmm.
What
do you think?
I think it has. I reviewed a small independent film and didn't like it very much, and I had seen it on a DVD, and then the producer sent me an email and said, you know, where did you see this? Because people who'd seen the film with an audience, it was a film called Film Geek, actually, which is kind of interesting. But
yeah, I know that film.
They had liked the protagonist a lot more, and people who had seen it alone felt kind of uncomfortable in that he was an annoying character. So I'm wondering.
Well, let me back up a bit, because we actually have three different situations. You can see the movie with the general audience. You can see the movie with a bunch of other critics in a screening room, which is a different experience.
Exactly.
Or you can see it at home on a videotape or a DVD.
You know, I think you said something very true, which is that sometimes small intimate movies lose more. You think that the big spectacle will lose more by being on television, but in a strange way, small intimate movies need a large screen to make the emotions larger and the nuances larger, and in a way we can adjust better to a spectacle. I do review films sometimes on DVD or tape, and I feel guilty about it, and always the publicist says to me, well, you have to see it projected on screen. And I say, yeah, I know, but can you please send me the DVD and I'll make a 20% allowance. I'll make a conversion factor in my
head.
Do
you think it would have mattered if he had seen it with an audience? Film Geek? Was it called Film Geek? I saw some of the film. Actually, I saw it on a DVD
and
couldn't stay with it because I found the character so unpleasant.
Yeah, I think it does make a difference. As far as seeing movies in previous screenings, some of what a previous caller was talking about, playing to other film critics, comes into action there. You know, I know film critics who move their bodies in a certain way. They squirm in the chair to let you know how they feel about a movie.
Philip Lopate is an editor, an essayist, a novelist, a poet. His books include Bachelorhood, Against Joie de Vivre, Portrait of My Body, and Waterfront, A Journey Around Manhattan. He's edited The Art of the Personal Essay for the Library of America, also writing New York, a literary anthology. And his latest for Library of America is American Movie Critics, an anthology from The Silence Until Now. He also has written his own an anthology of his own film criticism called Totally, Tenderly, Tragically.
We call it a collection, yeah.
And I thank you so much for being with us.
It's such a pleasure.